The topic, a fascinating topic in general, has to do with if you start a working relationship with someone, or you create the possibility of a working relationship with someone, and somebody wants to pull out. Let's say the boss wants to pull out, or the worker wants to pull out. So what exactly is the story there? And it comes up very practically in a lot of cases. It's interesting, my wife just picked up my sister from the airport. I remember I saw discussed some point a few months ago a halacha l'maisa case. It was in one of the Choshen Mishpat email discussions, but it's directly out of this parak at the very beginning of the sixth parak here, that let's say you call up a taxi service and you tell the guy, please drive me to the airport. And he says, okay, it'll be $100 to drive you to the airport. And then your friend calls up and says, listen, I hear you're going to the airport, I'm going too, I'll be happy to take you for free. So do you have the right now to call back the taxi guy and say, listen, I don't need you anymore? And then the taxi guy says, what do you mean? I had other options, other people who wanted to reserve my service. I turned them down because of you, and I would have made $100. But now I don't have anybody hiring me because I had reserved myself to work for you, so I want you to pay me anyway, or I want you to continue to use me. Don't use your friends, it's going to take you for free. So you're allowed to do that? Who's right there? Who wins in this case? So this is a very complicated area of halacha, and we probably won't get to that specific point today, because we first have to figure out another part of the question. But there are a couple of elements that, strictly speaking, in the case we just said, so you caused the person, so to speak, to lose, let's say, $100, if we'll call that the going rate for what the taxi ride to the airport would have been. So strictly speaking, in Dine Mamonis and Dine Nezikin, one should not be liable for such a loss, because we have a halacha that even though if I cause you to lose money, I normally am liable. That's what it's called, to be a mazik. But when it comes to Nezikin, we normally say grama of Nezikin is pasuk, that if I cause indirectly a loss, it's not that I took a hammer and I smashed your windshield and directly broke your property, but you ended up losing money indirectly because of something I did. So here, you would have profited a certain amount had you not committed yourself to me. But because you committed yourself to me, you ended up not making it. That's very indirect. And normally, you should not be chayav for that, you would think. But we'll find out here, again, in the longer run of the sugya, is that it's possible that there is some chiyuv, and one of the major issues the Rishonim are going to try to figure out is why should there be a chiyuv if that does seem to be causational. If that's not like I actually broke your property, you figured you would have made without me, you would have made some money, and now you're not going to make it, so why is that the case, that that's something I should be chayav for, or should I be chayav? So it's a very complex question. But before we get to it, we'd like to focus on first is the situation where you're not chayav and some of the interesting chidushim that emerge from there. So if you look, it's just a short passage in the beginning of the sixth parak. So the Mishnah has the following one. If somebody contracts, if somebody hires a worker. So here you have the phrase umin, just interesting, that it's an important distinction that will come up, that in halacha we have at least two different types of workers. We have a poel and we have a kavlan. A poel works by the hour. So you basically pay him for his time, pay him by the time. While a kavlan, as is used in modern Hebrew as well, you know, to mean a contractor who takes up a task, a kavlan is paid for a job, regardless of how long it takes. And there are some significant halachic distinctions. We'll see if we have an opportunity over the course of our summer to get into too many of them. There's a lot to talk about. but sometimes it makes a big difference. One of the differences it makes is relevant to this broader situation, that the Gemara will tell us that a poel has the right to pull out. He has an extra edge as far as that's concerned. That's what we're discussing here, basically the question of either a boss or the employee pulling out on the other one. So there's a special benefit for a poel. The Gemara says, poel yachol achzer afilu b'chatzi hayom, that a poel has the right to quit even in the middle of the day. I have to figure out what exactly that comes to include. What does the middle of the day mean? The middle of the day sounds like the chiddush is you don't need any warning, which may or may not be true. Chaznish didn't think that was true. We'll maybe get to why that is. But what it then perhaps means, if it doesn't mean that you can leave without warning, what it might mean is just that chatzi hayom, it's hard to imagine that's any real period of work. However long you're contracted for, it's probably at least a day. And so the idea of saying that the worker can leave in the middle of the day is a way of saying that there is no amount of time that you can force him to stay. He always has the right to pull out. And he'll have the upper hand. Which means that you can't say, for example, that, okay, now since I have to hire a new worker for the other half of the day, and it's harder for me to get workers, so it's going to cost me more, so I want to take out of your salary. You worked for half a day, so you should get paid half of the rate, but I want to pay you less than half because I want to take out of what you would have earned and give it to the next guy because I have to pay more because I have to get him at a disadvantage. So you're not allowed to do that. That the worker is entitled to his half day salary, even though he pulled out in the middle. So that's also related to this whole issue the Mishnah is talking about here. If you have the boss and the worker, and one pulls out on the other, and it causes some type of problem for the other one, what exactly are the rules? What exactly is the situation? So a poel is going to be distinct from a kavelin. That's a benefit that the poel has. And we'll see there are some cases where it's not really clear whether a person is a poel or a kavelin. It may depend a little bit on how exactly we define it. What do we focus on when we try to distinguish between the two? So here, the Mishnah uses the phrase asocher asa umnin, which is different than both phrases. And the next parak is called asocher asa polim, focuses on one. This one's called asocher asa umnin. So what does umnin mean? So the Rishonim point out that the word umnin has a little bit of a connotation like a kaplan specifically, because an umnin, like umnis, is considered to be a craftsmanship, artisanship. It suggests like it's a little bit more of a specific skill rather than just somebody who's laboring for hours as opposed to the job. But that's probably an inclusive term that includes both the poel and the kavelin. Either one, if you contract a worker.
It's an umnin, like we had in Moed Khan, right?
Uh huh. Right, so different types of work, skilled labor, that's what they help us call a moed. Right, so you have such distinctions. But here it seems to be that the phrase is meant to include all the different types of workers you theoretically could employ. You could employ a kavelin, you can employ a poel, whoever it is. So this is going to be true. So what is it that's going to be true? So let's say you have a situation where you employ somebody to work for you, and one pulls out on the other. That's what the Mishnah is dealing with here. Hasoicher es omnin behitu zeh ezeh. So literally translated, it means that somebody is employed and one or the other deceives the other. That's what the language literally should translate as. But the Gemara is going to explain that what it means is you go back on the other. The boss says he doesn't need you, or the employer says to the boss, I'm not interested in working, and they pull out. So the Mishnah here says, the case the Mishnah is assuming in the first line is that there is no actual loss in this situation. So let's say, for example, I tell the worker I'm going to hire him tomorrow. I say, show up at 9 o'clock and you'll have a job. And then I tell him at 9 o'clock he shows up and I say, you know what, I don't have a job for you. I don't want you to work for me. And the guy still has the opportunity to get hired by somebody else. There are other people who will hire. So in the end of the day, he doesn't end up with any less money than he would. There are other issues. The Rishonim try to pinpoint what the other issues may be, but it's not an actual financial loss. He ends up finding another job. There are other opportunities, but he's, at least for now, let's say he's inconvenienced. So it's not getting this das because you didn't necessarily do it on purpose. Right? You know, you thought that could have been, for example, you're playing a joke on somebody. So that's not smart. You know, that if you're going to say to somebody, I'm going to hire you, and you never had detention in the first place. So that's a serious aver of a nas dvar, hurting his feelings. Interesting that in that subject, actually, now that you mention it, the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about a nas dvar, about causing somebody pain through your words, where he discusses a very similar case to that. Although it's a little different, interesting, the Chassam Sofer has a case where the question was, somebody was either a shochet or a chazen, somebody of some ritual standing in the town, I forgot which position it was, and the question was, should he be fired from his job for what he did if he played a cruel joke on somebody? If there was somebody who was known to be very committed to the mitzvah of Mila, so this individual, the chazen of the shochet, he told this guy, he said, oh, I had a son, mazel tov to me, I want you to perform the Mila and come to my country house on Tuesday morning, it's 3 hours away, and perform the bris. And so the guy travels for the 3 hours, and the original person says, ha, I was joking, I had a girl. So there wasn't really a bris involved. So that's a practical joke, which caused this guy to waste a lot of time. And that the Chassam Sofer has a whole shuva discussing what the penalty should be for that aveiru of an nas dvar. So that's a different story. If you tell somebody, I have a job for you when you're playing with him, so that's not right, and that's an aveiru in of itself. But let's say it's not what's happening, you're not playing with him, but you change your mind. I'm being vague about it.
But I told him the case with the Mila, wasn't it be different? Because it's a bar mitzvah, and he has chai alicha. So if he spent any time to take money for it, it'll be well.
Yeah, you know, that's a fascinating point. It's interesting, the Chassam Sofer in the Tshuva, so he talks about all the kinds of penalties he thinks should be imposed. So one of the things that he says there, this is a little bit of a different topic, but it's just fascinating, he says that the guy has to pay the potential moel, he has to pay him asar zehuvim, 10 gold coins. So where do you get that from?
Ten
gold coins, asar zehuvim. So where do you get that from? So the Gemara says in Chulin that if you steal a mitzvah from somebody, right, let's say, for example, I did have a son, and I was about to perform a bris milah, and somebody walks past and says, hey, look, an 8-day-old baby. I better give him a bris milah. And he steals my mitzvah away from me. He performs a bris milah before I have the chance to. So now I can't do it, so he stole my mitzvah from me. So the Gemara says he has to pay me asar zehuvim. He has to pay 10 gold coins. So here, the Chassam Sofer imposes that penalty also. He says, pay 10 gold coins. So presumably what he's saying is that why did this guy show up there in the first place? He showed up for this kar mitzvah. You're right, like he wasn't looking to get paid money, he was looking for the mitzvah. So now there's no mitzvah for him to do, he came for nothing. So if the Gemara in Chulin is implying that the value of a mitzvah, when we translate it to monetary terms, is asar zehuvim, so then maybe you should pay this guy the asar zehuvim because he came for the mitzvah, there's no mitzvah to get. So you should pay him asar zehuvim instead. It's kind of a fascinating parallel sugya to this specific sugya. So in that case, you cost the guy his potential mitzvah that he came and traveled for, and there wasn't really a mitzvah to begin with. But let's say here, it's not that you were playing a joke of a guy, but you thought you would hire him, and then you changed your mind. I'm being a little bit vague about it because we'll see, it may make a difference as to why you changed your mind. Let's say the boss had a legitimate onus. There was a situation where he really thought he had workers, and then there was some type of accident or something that happened to his property, and there was some type of natural disaster, and now he doesn't have the ability or the need to employ anybody. Maybe that might be different. So before getting into the Mishnah is going to talk, and the Gemara is going to talk about circumstances that might be more legitimate. But let's say somewhere in between. It wasn't a practical joke, but it wasn't that he is completely blameless in this either. He committed a worker to work for him, and then when the worker shows up, he tells him, go home, I don't have work for you. So the interesting thing is that the Mishnah is going to go on to say that if he ends up costing the worker, if the worker cannot find extra work now, or cannot find equivalent work. So it's possible there is a chiyuv there. It's possible that the employer is going to have to pay him something, which is very surprising in terms of the laws of Agrama, that you would think that this is not a direct loss. He didn't actually damage the property of this guy. It's a causational loss, and part of the issue with causational is that it's speculative. Right, that you might say, listen, no, you're telling me that without me committing you, you would have made $100 from somebody else. Who knows? I don't think anybody would have hired you. I think I'm the only nice guy in the world who ever would have hired you, and you're no worse off because no one else would have hired you anyway. What if I say that? I say that, all right, it's a shame that I'm not coming through with my commitment to give you a day's worth of work, but you're no worse off than had you never met me because nobody else would have hired you. And you say to me, that's not true, I'm very good, anybody else would have hired me had I been available yesterday when they were hiring people. Now I committed myself to you, that's why I lost the money. So we'll have to figure out, even if I won't get to that today specifically, when is there a chiyuv in that circumstance, and why should there be a chiyuv if this is a causational type of issue? So how is it, even if the worker really is right, that he wouldn't have gotten another job, but why is that not in the category of grumman? So let's say in the case of our taxi driver, the taxi driver said, listen, had you not called and committed me yesterday, I would have gotten five other people in line calling to ask me to drive them. But I said no to all of them because I was going to drive you. So is there a chiyuv there, and why is there a chiyuv there? It's very possible there is, and the question is why, so that we'll probably have to get into more next time. But what we're interested in first is here in the case in our Mishnah, before it gets to that, the Mishnah mentions that let's say you have a situation where there is no loss. There is no monetary loss, at least. The Rishonim will point out there's something else going on, but there's no monetary loss. You ask the worker to show up, and then when the work day comes, you tell him, sorry, I decided that we're going to go in another direction. So then the worker is able to quickly run out of your place of employment and find somebody else, and he ends up getting a day's pay from a different person. So what happens in that circumstance? You pull out and there's no actual financial loss to the other person, or vice versa. The employee says to the employer, I know you told me yesterday I was going to work for you, and I agreed, but I decided I'd rather work for that guy, so I'm not showing up. And the boss is annoyed, but he sends out puts a quick posting on some online server, and 5 minutes later somebody else contacts him and says he'll do the job. So again, the boss doesn't lose any money either. So let's say a situation like that where somebody pulls out on somebody else in either direction, the boss or the employee pulls out, but the other party ends up being able to function financially the same way they would have otherwise. So if that happens, it says the Mishnah, so then they don't have any claim on the other except tarumus. So what does that mean? This is a fascinating phrase. This is especially as we're in Elul now, there's some interesting points that come out of this Mishnah. So what exactly does that mean? So first of all, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? Is the Mishnah trying to tell us what's not there, or the Mishnah trying to tell us what is there? So the Tiferes Yisrael, for example, suggests in the Mishnah that it's making a point of what's not here. That the Mishnah is trying to say there's no monetary obligation in those circumstances. That if one pulls out on the other, and the other is able to replace the party who has pulled out, so then there is no chiyuv, then there's no monetary liability from one to the other. Maybe that's the thrust of the Mishnah. But others assume that the Mishnah is saying something else. It's saying that, yes, there's no monetary chiyuv, but there is tarumus. So what does tarumus mean?
I don't understand
First thought is
there's no
right. So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, the Mishnah has this language, there's nothing except tarumus.
Right.
So tarumus, we'll figure out what that means, seems to mean that there's some type of anger, there's some type of irritation. We'll figure out what that means halachically. But maybe the Mishnah is trying to say that we're not interested in that part of the phrase so much. It's really just telling us that, yeah, well, he gets to be annoyed, but that's it. You know, that there's no monetary liability.
Right, so it's not paying attention to the word terumus.
That's possible, right. That's the way the Tiferes Yisrael seems to say that. The thrust of the Mishnah is to say that there's no monetary liability. unless the Mishnah then goes on to describe the circumstance where maybe there is monetary liability. And we'll see that, let's say, if the worker can't get another job, or let's say in the boss's case, if the boss has, the commission is going to describe, and the Gemara is going to describe in more detail, let's say you have some type of a work environment where if it goes untended for a day, there's going to be significant loss. It's the type of product which has to be addressed right away, and if the workers aren't there to deal with it, something's going to go to waste, there's going to be some type of financial loss. So then that might be a different story. But under the circumstances where there's no financial loss on either party, so then there's no liability, and all there is tarumah. So it could mean that that's just trying to tell you there's no liability, that's the thrust of the Mishnah. But it sounds like it's saying something more than that. It sounds like it's saying that there is something, and that's tarumah. So what does tarumah mean? So it's interesting. So if you look in the Achronim, really, the Achronim have to try to explain what tarumus is, and then you also have to explain why is there tarumus. If there's no financial loss, let's say there's nothing. Okay, so at the end of the day, everybody has all the same money they would have had otherwise. So then let's say, there's nothing, there's no liability at all. So the Rishonim try to explain that it seems that there's one of the common ideas you find in the Rishonim is that there is tircha, that there is a valid claim because of the effort. The guy's got to suddenly scamper. He's got to have to rush now to try to find somebody else who's going to, is that a real word, scamper? Has to rush to find somebody who's going to hire him. And even though at the end of the day he does, but now there is this extra effort that's placed upon him to do that, or the boss has to quickly rush to get somebody else to replace him. So that is a taina. It's not a monetary taina in the same way, because he doesn't end up financially disadvantaged, but he ends up with a burden that he hadn't expected because of your behavior. So there is something there. There is a taina. That's how most understand this idea of what the tarumus is for. Others point out that there are other components, that maybe the guy has a claim, or some just non-monetary claim, because he had expected to work for you, and now he's got to adjust to a different boss. Showing his expression, shinoi das, which might mean that, might mean something else, but they have to adjust to a different type of employer. So even if he ends up getting paid the same amount of money, that again stresses him in a way that he wasn't expecting to do. And, or the Gemara has this expression in another daf, and it's a question what exactly it means, told he of Shinoi Das, or it could mean just the idea of being forced to change your plans, even again without monetary consequences, is grounds for this type of tarumas. There's one view in the Rishonim that also suggests, let's say in terms of the workers, that you're going to cause people to gossip about them. That if somebody all of a sudden is in a position he has to look for a new job when he expected to have a job with you, so then that's going to cause what the Rishonim say, lazus fasayim. People are going to say, well, what's going on here? Why is it that he now has to look for a job somewhere else? So that's also something a person may have a taina for. He may have some type of complaint. So the Rishonim have these different suggestions as to what exactly is the basis for this tarumus, and those are among the suggestions. Even though the guy doesn't lose out money, but he is stressed in a way that he wasn't going to be otherwise, looking for a job, dealing with people's rumors, having to adjust to a different employer, or vice versa, and all of that is grounds for tarumus.
So anyway, any of these explanations of tarumus...
Mm-hmm. No. I haven't explained it yet. We explained why he has tarumus. We still haven't explained at all what tarumus is.
Oh, okay. So I was about to say, it doesn't sound like any of them are actionable. Like, you can do anything about it.
Right. So that's again the point. The point Mishnah is saying there's no financial actionability here. Right? There's no no one's going to be paying anybody else because there was no monetary loss, but there was something.
Right. So there's something. I guess my gut reaction is, so what? I mean, so what do we care? So you were irritated, or so...
Right,
you know,
so that's...
You can't do anything about it, so what's enough to...
So right, that's exactly what to figure out. So what is tarumus? Right, so the thrust of the Mishnah is, so what, there's a little bit of debate. So it seems to be that there's clearly no monetary obligation. And as we'll have to discuss next time, it's a little bit more of a Chiddush the other direction, why there should ever be
negative feedback available.
So that might be exactly what it means. That's what we'll see. Right, so there's a range of interpretations. It's interesting that you probably have to look to the Achronim more for interpretations. The Gemara and the Rishonim don't really explain it so much, a little bit maybe, what exactly this tarumus is. So some say the Chassam Sofer and the Chazon Yechezkel's commentary on the Tosefta by Professor Lebronsky, and Rabbi Saul Salanter has a letter about this, where some suggest that it means l'hisra'im belibo, that basically he should have a grudge against somebody. And this again is very much an elul.
But this word, do we have? Is it a common? Like,
it appears a couple times in the Gemara.
Is that like Truma Samina?
So that's interesting. Some Rishonim do bring that up. It sounds like it's a different usage, but some in the attempt to try to explain what it's here, probably there are a couple places in the Nezikin context where you talk about Tarumas, which is probably comparable meaning. Tarumas Aminim is the expression the Gemara has in the first parak of Brachos about why they didn't put the Aseres HaDibros in daily davening. So it sounds like a different usage there. There are some of the Achronim who invoke that phrase to try to figure out what it means, but it sounds like that's a different usage. But it's not 100% irrelevant. But there are other Choshen Mishpat kind of usages. There are other Nezikin, Seder Nezikin usages that are probably more relevant. But we still, in all of them, have to figure out what exactly they mean. So what does it mean to say, I got Tarumas on you? What does that mean, you got Tarumas? Right, so your point's well taken. Okay, you're irritated. So what does that mean? And so one possibility is what the Chazon Yecheskel, Mechsan Sofer, and others say, is that you have the right to be angry. So what in the world is the Chiddush there? So the Chiddush is because you don't always have the right to be angry. You don't always have the right to bear a grudge against somebody. That's an Isser in the Torah. Right? The Torah says in Parshas Kedoshim, well, Sikom v'lo Sitor, that one should not take revenge, and one should not bear a grudge. Natira is to bear a grudge. So it sounds like maybe what this is saying is that normally I'm not allowed to bear a grudge, I'm not allowed to be noter, and here you are allowed to bear a grudge. So if that's the interpretation, you have to figure out a couple things. One, you have to figure out, so what's the nature of this heter? Why is it mutter here if it's an isser in the Torah? And the second question, which I think is a little harder to find an adequate answer for, is even if you could explain here why it is technically mutter, still hard to see what purpose it serves, if that's the interpretation. So we have to see if that is a satisfying interpretation. But basically the issue is, just to try to finish the point before running out of time, is that the Gemara has a discussion as follows. The Gemara says, let's say I ask you to lend me something, and you say no. And then tomorrow you come to me, you want to borrow something of mine. So I say to you, no way, I needed you yesterday, you didn't help me, I'm not helping you today. So the Gemara says, that's an issur of loisikom, that's an issur of taking revenge. It's a surprisingly mundane example. I talk about vengeance, you think it involves, you know, a ski mask and a machine gun, and you see that it's much more mundane. I'm not going to lend you something because you didn't lend me. That's taking revenge. The Gemara Masech is Yuma. Yeah, let's say the scenario is basically the same, but I say to you, oh, you want to borrow my things? Sure. I'll lend you myself because I'm not a jerk like you. Yesterday, you needed me, I needed you, you didn't help, but I'll help you. I'm a lot nicer. So that's called bearing your grudge, that you do it, but you can't resist saying how you're different. So then that's called material. That's called bearing a grudge. So then the Gemara has a distinction, that the Gemara says that it's only in this kind of strange case, which is not what you would have imagined. You would imagine that the Torah says, don't take revenge, don't bear a grudge. It's something much more active against somebody who really hurt you, not just this issue of not helping somebody who didn't help you. In a monetary kind of context, much more mundane. So the Gemara has a distinction there, that the prohibition only applies if it's an issue of mamona, if it's a monetary issue like providing material assistance. But if somebody really hurts someone else, tzair d'gufa, so then it sounds like it is mutter. So some say that's what's going on here, that whatever anguish is being caused is of a more personal nature. So there is a heter to bear a grudge as opposed to the normal iser of natira. Now there are a couple of problems with that. First of all, even if you want to say that this is in the category of tzair d'gufa, so first of all, the Gemara then goes on to say that even when it's permissible, we certainly don't recommend it in that context. And the Gemara says that we apply the principle of kol hamavra midosa of mokul or kol avonosa. Again, this is very much an elul idea that whoever is able to forgive others, he will be forgiven for his own avers. So we encourage people to not bear a grudge even when it is permissible. So that's one point. But then it's also a question, if that statement, that distinction is brought l'halacha. The Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch don't bring that distinction, that there is a license when it's tzair d'gufa. And the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Sefer HaChafetz Chaim that since some of the Rishonim don't bring it, so it's a suffik v'halacha if it's true, it's an iser deraisa, it's a suffik deraisa v'chomer, so v'halacha, there is no such heter of tzair degufa. So it's not 100% clear that there is such a heter in practice, not 100% clear what is included in that heter, and even if that's true, so then you have to ask, let's say we say, alright, somehow it does fit the Akamara, and this is a case where it's permissible to bear a grudge. So why would we advocate that? Wouldn't we still say that even if it's permissible, it's probably a bad idea, and what exactly do you accomplish by bearing a grudge in this case? So it's interesting, we're almost out of time, so just quickly fill in, that there are a couple of other interpretations as well. So some say that it means you can yell at the guy. And, you have the rishus to scream at him, which is also normally as well a interpersonal bad behavior. But here, because the person did impose some type of unjustified stress upon you, you don't have to just smile and say, it's okay, you're still wonderful. You can yell at him and you can say, listen, you're causing me problems here, I'll survive, but this is not proper business practices and this is not the way that you should be. And again, here the question is, what's the toelas? Well, you can hear it a little bit more, that he'll know not to do that again next time. So if he'll know that if he arranges to work with you next week, that if he doesn't want to get screamed at, he's not going to pull out and impose this stress on you, or vice versa.
Does the halacha recognize the toelas of you just feeling better?
Possibly. Yeah, so that's also an interesting question. So that gets to the third point. So this is going to be a longer discussion, so we're going to run out of time, but just to quickly get it on the table, maybe we'll fill it in next time, is that there is a third possibility, which is based on actually a Rashi. Rashi sounds like he's saying this. There's a Chasha the Dayan in Eretz Yisrael, Bang and Solomon, who wrote a sefer called Darche Choshen, where he asserts this position, that maybe it means that you can tell people about it. That in other words, there's a possibility of there being an issue of Lashon Hara, and apparently not. But apparently Tarumus means that you can tell people, listen, doing business with this guy is not always so smooth. It's not always, so this is very much related to what you were referring to, that maybe this is, when we have a modern equivalent to talk about, Amazon or eBay feedback of what it's like to deal with a person. So maybe that's in that category, that basically you're saying that you have, even though you didn't lose money dealing with this person, but you had other anguishes, you had other stresses that were not really appropriate because of how this person did business, and maybe you have the right to talk about it. So you have to figure out what exactly that means, and the post can say, it doesn't mean that you can go all around town destroying the person's reputation, but to a certain limited extent, that it's permissible to talk about it. So then the question is, so this is also a relevant to your question, so seems to mean that it's because there's some type of toelis, that there is some type of purpose in saying this. So you have to figure out what type of purpose is it, because there are two good possibilities. One is that it will save other people from this type of anguish, and even though people are not really at risk in an actual sense, because it doesn't cause people to lose money, it doesn't actually hurt them in that way, but it's still a stress, a minor stress, but it's still something that people would find unpleasant. So maybe that is a license to talk about this and tell other people to protect themselves from this. Or maybe it's toilets for you, that maybe the guy recognizes he doesn't want to get the bad feedback on eBay. He doesn't want to have to deal with people hearing about this. So maybe that's the case, that you have the right to put it out there so that you'll have some possibility of protecting yourself even against these minor stresses, which are not actually so consequential in the monetary realm, but they have some impact on your state of mind. Maybe you have the right to talk about that as well, again, in a somewhat controlled type of manner. So a lot of issues we still have to discuss, but we're out of time. But included in this, so the next question to ask is, so also, what are the halachic implications of this Mishnah in terms of permissibility? So are we saying that if there is this tarumus, does it mean that it's permissible to do this, permissible on the worker to pull out, he just has to cope with the tarumus? Or is this our way of saying, listen, we can't sue you for this, it's not actionable, but we're trying to tell you it's wrong to do. Anything that will give your opposing party some license to have tarumus on you is a way of saying it's bad behavior. And even though you're not going to be sued, you're not going to be forced to pay anything, if we're giving the other guy, quote-unquote, Tarumas rights, it means that it's bad behavior. Rav Nassim Gestetner in his Chidushim to Bar Mitzvah has a long essay about this, and there's a discussion in the earlier Makaris as well. You know, in circumstances like this, are we saying that there is a license to do it, just to have to then deal with the Tarumas the other guy has? Or is it a way of saying it's not actionable, but it's essentially usur, it's essentially a violation of Hain Tzedek, of Sherus Yisrael Liyatzel Avlis, essentially dishonest behavior, it's essentially not living up to your commitments, and it's wrong to do. Some will also find that it may depend on the circumstances. You have a really good reason for pulling out, or let's say to go to the taxi model, so to save $100 to go from 100 to 2, 100 to 0, is possibly an understandable circumstance. You know, they're saying it's not just that you randomly decided you like the other taxi service better, but you like the other taxi service better, it's that you really don't need the job anymore, you know, have it for free, so maybe that's justifiable. Maybe it's not. It could be that 2 days, it may depend on what the circumstances are. So there's a lot of other questions here, and then the big question is going to be, when there's more than Tarumas, when there's actually a financial liability, so why is there liability if it's simply a causational damage? Why is it that the halacha does seem to recognize some license to recover for that? So then we'll have to pick up with that next time and try to see how that impacts on various cases. Okay, sure.